You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. This is the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, this lovely afternoon. Wherever you are, unless you are in, was it Missouri? Or one of those states got hit by the tornadoes. Oh, my goodness. Not such a great afternoon, but we feel really bad for those people. So please keep them in your prayers. Of course, my lovely co-host, Paula Lausanne Osman, is with us. Paula, how are you today?
Doing great, Tom. It's 57 up here in Boston. Cloudy and damp and want to know where the sun is. I actually got to go to the beach down in Tiverton, Rhode Island on Saturday, spent the afternoon, and I got a sunburn.
Oh, no. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Yeah, I've learned the hard way growing up in Arizona and Southern California, now living in Florida. I don't go anywhere without looking like, the Pillsbury Doughboy, you know, all white. Not
right.
That I'm fat, but I just kept all lathered up with all that heavy-duty sunscreen. And it's true, you know, as you get older, you start finding things, and you go, boy, I know the sun caused that, and I've had to have a few things removed, and that's no fun. So I tell people out there, especially younger people, don't go out sunbathing. You know, if you want to go to the beach, sit under an umbrella. In fact, we just bought a canopy, a whole, you know, big canopy, 10x10 canopy to set up at the beach. And it's not that hard to set up, and it really blocks out the sun. So that's very, very good. But in any case, well, it's cloudy here today in Southern Florida, but it's still, you know, mid-80s and humid. So that hasn't really changed much. But anyway, well, listen, let's get right to our guest. Karen Harrington is joining us on the radio today. She's running for Congress in Florida's District 20. And, of course, if you know anything about Florida and our representatives, you'll know that the incumbent right now is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Now, I'm going to say this is me personally, and I've had plenty of people agree with me. They might not want to say it, but I think she's the harshest, most abrasive woman in politics. I mean, she just never smiles. She's just mean, and she's like a pit bull for the Democrats. Not very nice, and not too bright either. But that all aside, she's taking on the role as the Democrat national chairman. Now, how do you stay a congresswoman properly representing your district and then take that job on? Those are like two full-time jobs. So let's introduce Karen and let her talk to us about this whole issue and whatever else she wants to talk about as far as her campaign's going. But how are you doing today, Karen?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks for coming on the show. Tell people how they can find out more about your campaign, connect with you, whether it be website, Facebook, Twitter, et cetera.
Okay, well, of course, my name is Karen Harrington, and my website is Karen for Congress. That's forcongress.com. And they can reach us there by email or give us a call, and we'd love to welcome them aboard to the campaign, like you said, to beat one of the most vicious women we have in Congress today.
Yes, vicious is this. Man, I've never seen her do an interview or talk about anything, even when things are good, where she seems to be a happy person. And I don't know what she is like in her personal life, but, boy, she doesn't seem like a happy person. Now, how does somebody fulfill the role properly of a full-time, being paid to work full-time by the voters, the constituents, the taxpayers, full-time congresswoman, and then take on the role of Democratic national chairman?
Well, I was asked that question by the media shortly after she was promoted to the DNC position, and they asked me how she would perform in both jobs. I said, well, first you have to realize that I'm running against her because I don't believe she fulfills her first position of representing the people here in Florida's 20th district. She certainly doesn't represent my values and the majority of people that I know. So I don't believe she does her first job well. So the fact that she's going to take on two jobs and try to fulfill that is near to impossible, as well as being a mother of three children that are still at home. Something is going to have to sacrifice. And I can tell you, being a constituent in this district, and I've watched her for 20 years, she doesn't represent me or my values or what I believe is great for this country, and that's why I've decided to step up and oppose her.
Yeah, well, that's great. And we wish you all the best of luck on that because we want to see her gone. And so the way I look at it is this, Karen, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, but I think it's a good thing for conservatives, particularly Republicans, but independents that tend to vote conservative and therefore Republican. And in the state of Florida, if you're an independent, you can't vote in the primary for a Republican or Democrat. So it kind of takes you out of choosing who your next representative is going to be, quite honestly. I tell people, if you're an independent, go ahead. Tell everybody you're an independent, but register Republican, because when the primary comes along, you want to be able to choose who's going to go up against that incumbent or that, you know, whoever, the challenger. So be, register smartly, but that's just my personal advice. But here's how I see it. By trying to do these two jobs, one is going to highlight even more how poorly she does her job as a congressional representative. But two, she's just not going to be able to do a very good job as the DNC chair. I think the only reason President Obama chose her is because she's Jewish, and his stance on Israel now is completely out of line with American values, with what Americans want to see done. I know that there are people that feel that Israel, we give them a lot of money and support, but we don't really give them money. We give them equipment, military equipment that adds up to a lot of money, but that's U.S.-made military equipment. And those are U.S. jobs that are putting those things together. But in any case, I see it actually as a benefit for us. Unfortunately, her constituents, you being one of them, is going to suffer over the course of the next year and a half because she's going to do an extra crappy job as being a congresswoman for District 20. But in the long run, I think we all benefit because she's taken on more than she can chew, and I think that'll benefit us. What do you think?
I think you're right. Your first point about trying to address the independents, I tell people as I knock on doors, Tom, I say, listen, you may not like the Republican Party, but get involved. You can always vote in the primary, and then right after the primary, switch back and become an independent again. But if you want to have a voice, an opponent that you want to choose to go against somebody like a Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you've got to get involved. So that's the advice I give them. I believe that by her becoming the DNC, I think you're right in one aspect. He did pick her because she's Jewish. And not only that, Florida is the largest swing state with the most electoral votes. And it's very important that he wins Florida. And I think he looks at Debbie Wasserman Schultz as being the key to that. You know, she's going to be.
I'm laughing.
That's okay. And we're very hopeful this time because I got almost 40% of the vote last time as a first-time candidate ever running for any office. And now that she's going to be on the national stage of the DNC, we're hoping for that national attention. And like you said, more people will recognize that she's not doing her job here. She doesn't have the vision that we as conservatives have looking forward to make this country great again. And we're hoping that it's going to draw a lot of attention to this district and show how unaccountable she truly is.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, do you think it's the Jewish vote that has kept her in office there?
No, I think the fact that Broward County is a 2-to-1 Democrat is what's kept her in office. The Jewish vote is important here, but it's not what carries her. It's the Democratic that we are outnumbered here. If we take the independents and the Republicans together, we equal the Democrats. But we've got to come out stronger, and I've met a lot of Democrats. That's why I did so well the first time, who do not like her.
Okay. Well, I would say I realize that Jews in America are less concerned about Israel than they are their own economic prosperity in America, and that's good because they're Americans. That's great. But at the same time, what this president has proposed, first of all, he talks in platitudes. There are no details literally in his speech on Israel except one detail, and that one detail is starting point 67 borders. Now, I don't even know where to begin. Negotiating 101 says you don't lay your biggest ace out there, your biggest card up front for a starting position. That's just insane. So he really screwed over Israel by throwing that on the table for them. And this guy is so absolutely incompetent, it just boggles the mind. So anybody that is concerned about Israel, concerned about the Middle East, concerned about our own interests throughout the world and in the Middle East, needs to be looking at this administration and anybody that supports this president, which would be Debbie Wasserman Schultz. They need to say, no, we need to get rid of this president. We need to get rid of Debbie. And I Twittered out today, I've got about 2,700 followers, to say, you know, you were going to be on the show. And I did it multiple times to make sure it reaches people. But I referred to her as Debbie What's-Her-Name Schultz. And I think that's how I'm going to refer to her from now on, the DNC chairman, Debbie What's-Her-Name Schultz. And just try and minimize, you know, what she has to say. Now, actually, her being, as you said, that was an interesting point. Her being out on the national front on this as DNC chair is going to put her face in the news more. And I think the more people that get to see her out talking, sort of like getting to watch Howard Dean, the more they got to see Howard Dean, I think it was just kind of, I don't like this person, less about his politics than he's kind of a weirdo. And I think people are going to be turned off by her. So it's good. She deserves a lot more face time in front of the press, and that's just going to turn a lot of people off, I think. Well, listen, what would you say is one of the big issues for the folks in your district, District 20?
Well, I'd have to say first and foremost that number one is jobs amongst people my age in their 40s. When I speak with the elderly, I was overwhelmingly surprised that their number one concern isn't themselves. It's not Medicare and Social Security. Their concern is the debt. They are extremely proud Americans. They've worked hard their whole lives, and to leave this nation worse off, this generation, my children, my grandchildren, is something that they cannot conceive of. So the debt for the elderly here in this community is number one priority.
Yeah. Well, hey, and I would agree with you. As I travel around and talk with people, I'm hearing the same kind of things, that people are concerned about the debt. And unfortunately, let's talk about this a little bit. Unfortunately, we have seen a lot of our leaders on both sides of the aisle and other groups, et cetera, all talking about proposals to cut the deficit. And people out there, if they listen to my show before, they know what I'm talking about, but you haven't listened before. The deficit is an annual thing. It's just the rate at which we're going into debt. It's not the debt. It's just the annual debt. And not one of these politicians, legislators, statesmen have proposed cutting the actual debt, only the rate at which we're going to go into debt. Now, they're all saying that, boy, we can't go after the debt right now because that would just harm seniors. And it just boggles my mind to think about our leadership. They're doing a huge disservice to the public people, to the American public, a huge disservice in that they're deceiving the American people. The average American doesn't realize that the size of the federal government, not the military, not Social Security, not Medicare, not Medicaid, adds up to $1.3 trillion. And not one of them is willing to cut the size of the federal government. So whenever you see on the news, even conservative news stations, they talk about, well, you know, we got to go after Medicare and Medicaid, but that's a touchy issue right now. How come, Karen, explain to me, why is it none of them have talked about, let's reduce the size of, say, the Department of Energy, the Department of Interior, the Department of Agriculture, the EPA, the FDA, by 50%. Let's just start with that. None of them have even proposed a 5% cut. And we had two Republicans that proposed, actually one was a Republican, I think one was a Democrat, I can't remember now, that, no, they're both Republicans, that proposed across the board 5% cuts, and then it was all security and this and that. You know what? Take some money from the Department of Interior. Its annual budget's about $15 billion. And fill in the holes where you think there might be some security. But they both proposed non-security, non-military. And finally, for the folks out there, when we talk about the federal government, $1.3 trillion, there is some non-mandatory and discretionary military and other services, national security, et cetera, involved in that. But that typically is pork that our senators and congressmen are taken back to their districts or state. And that's why they're called non-mandatory. Our country's not going to be in jeopardy if those things don't get funded. So, Karen, my vision for trying to cut the debt, the actual debt, and win over the American people is go after the federal government first, prove that you can achieve that, and then you can start talking about reforming Social Security and Medicare. Why are none of our elected officials talking about that?
Well, I think you put it in pretty good perspective. They are talking about 5 and 10% cuts. I believe Senator Lemieux was talking about going back to the 07-08 budgets, which would trim 10 or 15% out of a lot of these programs. I think that's a start. But I think the scare tactics that the left want to use about us not increasing the debt ceiling is completely false. And I think by not raising the debt ceiling will only stop us from not borrowing any more money. But it will force us to be responsible and to pay down our debt. And it's not going to ruin our credit around the world. but we will be able to pay down our debt. It'll just take a little bit longer, and we'll have to prioritize. But there is waste in every single program. And I think what's the matter with our career politicians on both sides of the aisle is they're afraid to say the wrong thing so that they don't get reelected. And this is a huge problem in Washington, and everyone wants to dance around the issues and not tackle them. So it's time, and I'm calling on my party, the Republican Party, to step it up and really become serious and talk serious cuts. And I think Paul Ryan is on the right track. It at least gets the conversation going. It gets us to the table. And we've got to make the hard choices. There is no more time to waste, and I don't want the fair tactics of the left to say everything in this country will stop, and it won't. And we will address those long-term issues of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Yeah. Well, the left, look, they're just a bunch of liars over there. And all they do is say, oh, if we don't raise the debt ceiling, then the government's going to collapse and on and on. Wait a minute. How much money do we take in through, income tax and corporate tax and everything else? Doesn't the federal government take in about $3.6 trillion a year? It's just that they want more. It's not enough. It's never enough. They're like crack addicts with the size of the government. So, yes, it'd be sort of like us in our own personal lives saying, well, we've been spending beyond our means, but we want to get another credit card so we can continue paying for the most expensive cable package that there is for TV and this and that and the other thing, instead of what most responsible people do is they go, pull the cable plug. We're not watching. The Internet, we'll have to go to the library if we want to look something up. You know, on and on. They cut back. They scale back and live within their means. But these people don't want to live within their means. So when they say we need to raise the debt ceiling, all they're saying is we can't give up the size of government. We are addicted to it. We can't let it go. We have plenty enough money to fund Medicare and Social Security and the military. It's just all their other boondoggle, all other crap that they want. So now let me ask you this. I got asked this a lot when I was running for Congress, and I had to think about it and try and come up with a reasonable answer. People are always so skeptical of somebody that wants to run for office, and I learned, and I'll tell folks out there, I learned sort of the hard way. You know what? People just don't trust somebody running for office. It doesn't matter what your background is. And it was kind of hurt my feelings a little bit at first, and I just got used to it. But anybody listening to the show, you have to understand, somebody takes the initiative and effort to get off the couch or whatever they were doing and get involved in a process like this, this is a very involved process. It takes a toll on you, your family, and everybody around you, and it's not something that anybody jumps into lightly. I mean, there may be some people, but to really do as well as you did in the last election, that was a serious effort, and for somebody that hasn't been in politics before, I got to tell you, you're the kind of person I'm looking for to vote for at all levels. So, but tell the people that are always skeptical and all that kind of thing, what is it about you that makes you unique, why somebody should consider voting for you, and why you're going to go to Washington and not drink the Kool-Aid like a lot of these politicians have done?
Great question, Tom. And you know what? I've been a part of South Florida since I was 4 years old. I came from Massachusetts with my parents, 5 kids, $600, and no job. And my parents taught me that hard work living in this amazing country will get you everywhere. We have been small business owners for 37 years. I have never aspired to ever be involved in politics. And you're absolutely right. When you tell someone you're running for office, they look at you like you have the plague. They don't want to shake your hand. They don't want to talk with you. But the next thing I say is I'm a first-time candidate. I've never been involved. Then they'll talk to you. They are tired of the career politicians, the same old song and dance, and nothing gets done. And you're right. At first, I took it personal. But I understand the same reason I've decided to run for office is what they are feeling as well. I don't respect the people that are supposed to represent me. I don't want this job. I don't need this job. But our country needs people like us, Tom, to say enough is enough. We want real people in Washington who have lived the lives that you and I have lived, have made a paycheck, have made payroll, created jobs, and stayed in business and lived within our means. That's the only thing that I can tell people is I have real life experience that I'm going to be able to bring to Washington, and you must trust that because I love this community and I want to honor that.
Okay, well, let's see. Let's get on to a few other questions. We had some people send in some questions. How do you think redistricting that's going on in Florida may affect this race?
Well, as you know, Florida got 2 more seats, and they're arguing over where to draw the lines. But from what I've heard from the Republicans is 1 will probably occur over in the Fort Myers area, a new district, and another one up somewhere between Jacksonville and Orlando. I do not expect my District 20 to change too much. If anything, it'll shrink a little, which is good for the people, better representation. No reason this district needs to carry two offices. That's unnecessary money, more employees, more staffing. I think it'll shrink a little bit and possibly favor a little more Republicans and independents by maybe 3 or 4%. So we're hopeful that the district will shrink and we will gain a little more fairness. And that'll be huge because I only need 12% more of the vote to beat her. And if you can bring in 3 or 4% more Republicans and independents, I'm looking at a very good opportunity in 2012.
Okay. Now, you ran in the last cycle and came close, and I'm sure you've learned a lot of things. When you ran, and I remember a few of the different people that were in your race, when you ran before, and I didn't pay close enough attention to know what was going on in the race between folks in the primary, but when you ran in that race, were people running against each other? And you have to some degree, but were you running against each other at all in that primary, or was everybody just focused on Debbie, and how do you see it going this time around?
No, well, the primary, I had two other opponents, and I had one that had a year head start ahead of me, and I was actually hopeful not to have to enter the race to be a candidate, Tom. I wanted to support that person, but I just couldn't find what was necessary in that person for the leadership I was looking for. So it was a competitive primary. We were all strong conservatives, but we had to battle each other out. And we did that, and it took away from our ability to go after Debbie, because once I did win the primary, I only had 6 weeks before people could start to vote early or absentee. So it was a very limited amount of time. So this time around, I am very hopeful that no one will announce to enter the race to run against me, so that my focus can be on her. These next 18 months can strictly be on going after her and winning. So I'm hoping the Republican Party unites and recognizes that Karen has the momentum. She has worked very hard. Let's do what we can to support her so that we have our best opportunity. This would be a huge upset. Someone as entrenched as Debbie is, as far to the left, even further than Nancy Pelosi, she must be eliminated, regardless of whether you live in this district or not. This is a huge seat.
Yeah. Well, you know, in my own race, here's what I saw. I saw five people that were on the ballot, two of which were attacking other people on the ballot. The woman who won, Sandy Adams in District 24, never said anything about any of the other candidates in the primary and only focused on Suzanne Cosmas, the incumbent. And she's the one that won. Now, it was a close race. Boy, it was very close for the top three. But I guess what the person that wrote into us is saying, you know, basically here, I'm just going to read it to you. Are you going to run on, let's see, your merits and against Debbie or against your primary competitors if some other, because, you know, we still got, there'll be competitors jumping in this thing. I know you hope they don't, and most people would look at it and go, gee, you know, she's tough to beat, and but people are going to feel compelled, I'll bet you, and you'll have a few other people. They may not be serious, I don't know, but by August, I'll bet there's a few other people in it. So the question was, are you going to run on your merits or against her primary competitors or against Debbie? So I guess that it's kind of, you know, your merits and against Debbie, or are you going to have to focus on competitors again in the primary?
I'm hoping not to have to focus on competitors, but, you know, that's what makes this nation great. If you feel the urge that you have to run and you think you're the better candidate, by all means, enter the race. But I am going to run on my merit. I'm going to run on my reputation, and I'm going to focus on Debbie. And
yeah.
I hope it stays that way. And I didn't really alter that much the first time around. I think the last couple of weeks before the primary, some of my opponents felt necessary to personalize it, unfortunately, but I just kept my focus, and that's strictly on Debbie.
Yeah. Now, Joe Goldner is in the race as a Republican, I believe, and he's actually going to be on the show next Monday. I don't know if you know Joe or not.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about Joe, but he's in the race. And, again, I don't know anything about him. But there's one person, and then somebody just wrote in and say there are two, let's see, there are two people in the race now that have announced, I guess. I don't know who the third one is.
I'm not aware. I know Joe Goldner has announced, but for someone to officially be put on as a candidate, I don't believe any of that's happened yet at this point.
Yeah, okay. All right, let's see, what else? What else do you think is important for people to know about Karen Harrington?
Well, like I said earlier, I have the life experiences. I'm a mother, I'm a grandmother, I'm a cancer survivor, I'm a business owner. And it was funny when you were talking earlier on the show to Paul about the sunscreen. I'm a melanoma survivor, so I can I love South Florida. I love the warm weather, and but you have to be careful. So I just wanted to get that point out because I look like you. I glow in the dark when I go to the beach, so put that sunscreen on. But what they'll know about me is they're going to get the real thing. They're not going to get somebody who's polished, who's trying to make a career in Washington, that's going up there to tote the party lines. They're going to get the real thing, the person that truly loves her country, believes in the founding principles that this nation was founded on, the Judeo-Christian beliefs. I believe in securing our borders, strong national defense, being, you know, honorable to our allies such as Israel, and doing what's necessary for the people. They want the jobs. They want to pay their taxes. They want to be responsible, and we need to provide an environment in Washington that encourages small businesses to grow. And that's what we got to do. If we can get America back to work, feeling good about themselves, this country will recover. But we've got to put the government on the sidelines, supporting the American people and the American dream. And that's what we need to focus on.
Okay. Let's see. What else? Paula, you have any questions for Karen?
I do. A piece came out today in CBS News that Obama's approval rating on health care improves and that, you know, his health care reform package has been controversial. But the numbers, the Americans feel that his handling of the health care, you know, is rising steadily. And you mentioned that you feel that a government takeover of healthcare and health insurance industries is not reform. Would you be able to explain to our listeners, Ms. Harrington, why you feel that way?
Well, I definitely oppose the Obama healthcare bill. As a small business owner, I can tell you firsthand that trying to give insurance to my employees, we have three restaurants, I employ over 100 people, it's no longer affordable since the since the start of Obamacare has even begun. I believe as a business owner, if I had more insurance companies in the state to allow competition, that would drive down the cost and I could afford to insure more of my employees. So I do not support a government takeover of our healthcare system. I definitely support reform and doing the things necessary to provide affordable insurance to all Americans. But nothing or anyone should be forced to pay a price in order to be free in this country, and by forcing the American people to buy health care is just completely wrong and it's unconstitutional. And I support the Rick Scott and our Attorney General here in Florida, Pam Bondi, to continue that lawsuit to push ahead. But we're running out of time, and if we don't get back control of the Senate and the presidency, we will not be able to repeal this bill in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, now let me ask you something, Karen, about what's gone on here recently with Libya, and we've got an administration that's violating in multiple ways the War Powers Resolution, and obviously violated the Constitution. I'm going to read something to you that a good friend of mine sent me, Mark Ross. He's been on the show, and he really knows the Constitution well. He comes up with some great quotes. He was kind enough to remind me the other day about this quote from James Madison. We all know that James Madison wrote the Constitution. Now, there were different versions that had been proposed, but it was James Madison version that they decided to work with and turn into what we have today, our Constitution. But he wrote the vast bulk of that with, you know, obviously some changes. But here's what Madison said about the President of the United States being able to go to war and make war and use the military, that sort of thing. He said, "The Constitution supposes what the history of all governments demonstrates, that the executive is the branch of power most interested in war and most prone to it. It has accordingly, with studied care, vested the question of war in the legislature." So the question of war is supposed to be vested in the legislature. And I guess we could say, well, we're not at war with Libya. We're just over there helping out and using the military. I think that really kind of defeats the point. And a lot of people would say, no, we are at war. We are fighting a war against the Libyan military. We're not fighting terrorists, not the war on terror. What would you do as an elected official? And I realize you're just one person, but what would you do with your colleagues to try and, control and rein in a president that's running around the world, jumping into engagements, and who in his Middle Eastern speech said, you know, we're going to support people that oppose their governments. So he's saying, if you want to rise up against your government, we're going to support you in the Middle East. And that's, I think, absolutely contrary to every bit of Middle Eastern policy we've ever had in our country. And here's a guy who wins a Nobel Peace Prize for what he's going to do. And what is he going to do? He's going to go around the world and assist rebels at taking down their governments. So what would you attempt to do as an elected representative to try and rein in a president like this?
Well, you make a great point, because I think the media gave him a pass because he only had the right to make an executive order based on imminent danger. And we know we weren't in imminent danger. So I think him overlooking Congress and getting their input and or vote before striking Libya is something that, like I said, the media gave him a pass on. And I would have argued or spoke up, and nobody really went after him about that. And they don't want to call it a war, but when you shoot in over 120 missiles, I'd say we're at war. And so I think he violated a big part and, like I said, got away with it. So I would speak up very strongly. I do support countries over there right now that are interested in overthrowing dictatorship. You can see the Middle East is on fire, which is even more of a reason that we should be behind supporting Israel and not pushing them to try to make agreements with the Palestinians that don't truly have a leader over there and expecting them to draw back their borders. So we have to be very outspoken and against our president for making such an aggressive decision. But I do want to support other nations and help them to form a democracy. I don't want to become, you know, like Iraq and go back in there and have to rebuild a nation, but we should offer them some type of support and encourage the democracy to grow, especially in the Middle East.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, my feeling on this is we've got a president that said he absolutely was going to close Gitmo in a year, it's still open. Absolutely going to try terrorists in public courts, not happening. You know, what else has he told us? Oh, he said getting involved in a nation's civil war is a waste of our time and dangerous for our military, and he's not going to, he wouldn't do that. And here we are doing it, and now he's saying we'll do it even more places if we have to. The guy can't be trusted. So when he tells Israel, we fully support you and will, you know, ensure that you remain safe so you can squash your borders down to almost nothing and be a little teeny state like you were pre-1967 and constantly at war. They were constantly at war because they were an easy target. You know, as a fighter pilot in the Navy, I can tell you, looking at that little strip of land that they would have left if they went back to 67 borders, it's indefensible. It's absolutely indefensible, and they would be finding themselves at war. So for a president to say, don't worry, we got your back, is essentially what he's saying. He's lied on so many other things or has changed and flip-flopped. I could easily see the Israel saying, all right, fine, as long as you got our back. And then, you know, things changed. Sorry, we don't got your back anymore. I mean, they can't rely on this guy. He is absolutely unreliable. And I think that's what the Republican Party needs to do, is hammer away at his absolute unreliability. And it's going to take, because the media is complicit in his election and going to be complicit in his reelection. And so I think the Citizens vs. United ruling was a good ruling, so that organizations can come out, and regardless of what the media is saying, they can run ads. Large organizations can bring in money and run ads night and day highlighting what a deceiver this guy is and how unreliable he is. What do you see the Republican Party needing to do to get rid of this, I think, worst president we've ever had in our nation's history?
I think, first of all, we have to get bold. If we didn't learn anything by the McCain race against Obama, is the fact that we tiptoed around so many issues because we were afraid of insulting the first African-American who was running for office and how the media was going to tear us up. And George Soros, as you know, owns most of the liberal media, and he controls the message. We've got to be aggressive this time. We have to hold this president accountable, not only for everything in the Middle East, but here at home as well, that he has really, truly not done one single thing to get America back to work, to seriously address this debt. And now the insult he did last Thursday on Israel, I can tell you personally as an American, I was never so embarrassed and humiliated. To be an American in my life is to watch the president throw that country under the bus.
Yeah.
We must point this out. We must get the message out, and no more tiptoeing around the issues. What he has done as a president has been absolutely nothing. We must be aggressive, and I'm going to hold Debbie Wasserman Schultz accountable because she supports every single thing he's done. She has not stood up for an American or the Jewish community, and we're going to have to be strong and bold and no political correctness. Call it like it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, here's something I think the Republicans need to do right now. They need to pass legislation deauthorizing the president's involvement in Libya and our military's involvement in Libya. First of all, no president has any authorization to write an executive order. There's nothing in the Constitution about writing executive orders. And just because, well, he's the executive. I've brought this out many times on the show. We have an enumerated power in the section that discusses what powers the president has, and it says he can ask a question. It doesn't say that. It says he can require an opinion in writing from each head, each department head. Well, if we have to enumerate that he can ask a question, would it not be logical we would also have to enumerate that he could direct the, all of these branches under the executive branch, all these departments are paid for and authorized by Congress. They don't work for the president. They work for the Congress. So that's step number one. But if the Congress were to write a bill that says, you have no authority to do this, funding's cut off, military's coming home, you know that the Democrats would all vote oppose it. Now we've got a great platform. In any, so Debbie, she's going to vote to support the president. No, no, I voted against that. Debbie Wasserman Schultz voted for warmongering. Debbie Wasserman Schultz wants to go into other countries and start wars. It just goes on and on. I think it would be a great trap for – there would be some Republicans that would vote against it too, quite honestly, like John McCain. Ugh, can't stand that guy. But anyway, I think it would be a great trap to put them – we got to start thinking outside the box and going after this guy in a variety of ways, and a simple piece of legislation that says, nope, you got to get out of there, I think would be helpful. Now, I don't know. Maybe there are a lot of Republicans that think we ought to be in Libya. I don't know. I would hope not. But and you know, to me, it's – I hate to say it, but it's a little bit about the process. I really don't like seeing a president, and I don't like seeing a Congress or a Senate violating the Constitution, because what's next? What are they going to violate next? So even if I thought going into Libya was good, the process was highly flawed, and it opens the door for, I think, bad things in the future. In any case, what do you think the Congress's role ought to be in reining in this president and eliminating some of his executive orders?
Well, they need to stand up, and they need to address just the issues that you just said. You outlined them perfectly, and hold him accountable. He does not have this right. And I always tell people, we're in the mess we are in, not just because of President Barack Obama. And this has been happening for a long time. And Congress is responsible for what has happened in this country, for the way entitlements have grown, for the pork spending, for the out-of-control government. They fail to do their number one job, and that's make a budget, and to balance a budget, which we need an amendment for that, too. We have it in Florida. For our state, we need to do it in the federal government. But our Congress has got to step up. And like I said, they've created this mess over decades, and they're the only ones who can fix it. And unfortunately, like you say, running for office, it's hard to get people to understand. And I know I'm only one person, and there's 435 seats, but we elected 87 new people. I want to set another record in 2012. I want 100 new people plus a new president. And now this will be our great opportunity to send real Americans, not career politicians, strong conservatives, stick with the message, honor the people, and do their will. So we've got to keep the fight going.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's going to be a tough battle. It's going to be an uphill battle. Let people know again how they can connect with you, with your campaign, and if they're interested in contacting you, asking questions, or helping out, where do they go?
Well, sure. Again, my website is Karen for Congress. That's F-O-R Congress. Our phone number here also is 954-358-4861, and we'd love your input. We'd love your support or anything else that you feel is missing in this country, in this district. My job is to go to work for the people, and you said it earlier, Tom, it's not an easy job for anyone to take on, but I think it's a calling, and it's a huge sacrifice on our lives personally. It's not a job for glamour. It's not a popularity contest. God is calling good people to step up and fight for her country.
Yeah. Now, if you get elected, are you willing to sign off on, I guess it would have to be an amendment to the Constitution, but a term limits amendment?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a big, big problem. As you can see, Debbie's been in politics for almost 20 years. She's never had a job in the private sector, but I think every 2 years is difficult on Congress. I would like to see a term limit of, say, 2 4-year terms for the House and 2 6-year terms for Senate, and that's it.
Yeah, you're right. It seems like just about the time that somebody gets elected to Congress, they're already starting to campaign for their next reelection, and that's not good. I agree with you. But, you know, a lot of people argue that term limits, you know, what if I have somebody that I really like? I mean, what do you say about that? If I have somebody I really like representing me, and then, you know, after 8 years they're gone, I have no choice. What do you say to that?
Well, after 8 years in Congress, if they've done a good job, they can run for Senate. And if it's not Senate, they can come back to their home district, run for mayor, city council, school board. You know, we're made up of almost 400 million people in this country. We can't elect 435 decent people every 4 years. There are a lot of good Americans that are business people, that are soccer moms, that are just good people to step up and do the right thing. I know they do a good job, and that's great, but they can find something else to do to help their state, to help their community. They don't have to stay in Washington. And besides, I can tell you from visiting there, it's not a place you want to stay a long time.
Okay, good. Good. Now, if we can't get term limits, how long do you envision yourself, if you were to get elected, running again and sticking around?
Wow, that's a tough question because I've never actually won the election yet. But I can't imagine 6 or 8 years maximum. I can imagine 8 years in government has to feel about like 25 in the private sector.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So although unless you're like Debbie Wasserman Schultz and you really don't do your job, then it's probably pretty easy. It's a cakewalk. Now she's going to have to actually do some work because it's more than just her constituents. It's her party is relying on her, and she's actually going to have to, you know, use a little elbow grease here with her party. It will be interesting to see if she actually does. I don't think she'll do much, but that's good. That's good for us. Well, listen, Karen, thanks for coming on the show. I know your time is very valuable, and things will be heating up here pretty soon. We'll have you back on the show later on in the campaign season to see how things are going and what you're up to. And, you know, let us know any time that you want to come back on. The other thing we can always do with candidates is if you've got a big list of folks out there that you want to get together with, I know how it goes. Sometimes it's hard to hold a little town hall, and people actually show up. Their lives are very busy. But we can actually do town halls here on the radio and have as many as like 200 people call in and asking questions, et cetera. So that's always a possibility. And then, of course, on the USA Talk Radio Network, we've got some other hosts that do a pretty good job, and they're always available to bring guests on. So it's just another way to reach out to more people. But in any case, thank you so much for coming on today. Good luck with your campaign, and we'll be in touch. Any last words you'd like to throw out there for the folks?
No, I just want to thank you, Tom, for reaching out to the campaign and recognizing that we have an opportunity to win here in District 20 and give this district back to the people. So you just keep being that great patriotic American, and you keep fighting for this country. You and Paula do a great job. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we'll keep Debbie, what's her name, Schultz in the news as far as what she's doing or not doing to help highlight that she needs to go, and that's an absolute fact. Well, anyways, Karen, take care, good luck, and we'll be in touch.
All right, thank you guys so much.
Okay, bye now.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right, Paula, well, sounds good, and I think, it's really what we need at times. I'm not going to endorse anybody, you know, now. When I was on the campaign trail, I met a lot of good people. And, boy, that race that was in District 8 to get rid of Alan Grayson, so glad he's gone. I heard he might actually be thinking about running again. But in any case, we got rid of Alan Grayson in District 8 of Florida. They had 8 people in the race. And everybody in that race was a great person. Everybody would have done a fantastic job. And sometimes it's tough when you have a bunch of people in a race. And you just, you know, you look at it and go, boy, who do you support, et cetera. So I don't know what we're going to do in some of these races coming up. And, of course, we're going to be bringing people on the show from all over the country. We've got some people lined up from some other states, and of course, Paula, you know, if you're looking around in Massachusetts or any other states that you're familiar with, you see some good candidates, you can reach out to them. But we'll be doing that as the election cycle starts heating up some more. Now, of a note, programming note, we're going to be broadcasting from Lima, Peru tomorrow, the exotic Lima, Peru. And I haven't been there in 6 years, Paula. Six years. So I fly there tonight. Actually, it's an all-nighter, so I get in the morning, then we'll broadcast in the afternoon. And then I fly out first thing on Wednesday morning. I'll be back here in Florida Wednesday afternoon, so we'll broadcast the show as normal. Next Monday, I did say that it was Jason Goldner, I believe, is going to be on Monday. Joe. I hate to get his name wrong. I've never met the gentleman, but Joe Goldner. He's also running District 20. It just so happens that he connected with me. I hadn't seen that he was in the race myself, and I was familiar with Karen having run last time. But we are open to anybody that wants to come on the show, and including liberals. Just be aware, if you're a liberal, it might not, you know, you're in a hostile environment. We'll give you the time and the opportunity to talk, but you're in a hostile environment. So, but Joe Goldner will be on Monday, and we'll be coming out with a list of some of the other candidates that will be coming on. It's a little bit early to be coming on radio shows right now, quite honestly, but that's okay. We want to meet some of these people that are already in it, because they are, and it's easier to get a hold of them right now than later on in the election cycle. So we'll be doing that. This weekend, I've said it throughout the month, but I'm going to be at the Tyco Airfield open house for Memorial Day weekend. Memorial Day's on Monday. I will not be there on Monday because I've got to fly out Monday night. But Saturday and Sunday at the Tyco Museum in my Navy flight suit, standing around the Navy jets that I used to fly. They've got a nice selection of jets there inside of the main building. Great, fantastic history of aviation, and particularly military aviation, but going way, way back to the Wright brothers. It's a kind of a mini, if you will, Smithsonian. Very nice, and they've just built a new hangar. I haven't even seen the new hangar yet, and it's dedicated to Vietnam-era aircraft, so things will be a little more spread out than they used to be. And I don't know, even know what the old hangar looks like on the inside now, but that's where the F-14 used to be. And we're going to get a picture of a bunch of us Navy guys. We got some old-timers among us. Get a picture taken, and then I'm going to be presenting that to the final celebration of the Navy 100 years celebration in Pensacola, Florida in October. So it's going to be a fun weekend up there. If you're around, stop on by, and we can chat. Okay, now, one thing we want to talk about is Joan Flowers here real quickly, and take some time to go over her situation. Joan has been fighting for years to get her father buried in Arlington. Her father was a World War II veteran, and we don't know as much about his record as we would like to. She asked the National Archives to give her his records, and they would have, but there was a fire at one point back in the 50s, I believe, and the records lost. But there are some other places where there are some records, so she's working to get those. But it looks like some of the initial records she's gotten, that he may very well qualify to be buried in Arlington. The problem is, number one, the military will pay for the burial, but getting him there is a whole other thing. She had already been promised by President Clinton that would all be taken care of back when President Clinton was the President of the United States. Well, his administration didn't follow through, and she's been fighting for this ever since. And she's reached the point where she's out of money. In fact, she's struggling to even pay the bills and eat, and I mean even actually eat food. So here's what we're doing. On the Facebook page, I put it there. I put something on the website as well. But you can go to the 19 April show and listen and hear about Joan Flowers. She's on Facebook and she's on Twitter. But if you could help out in any way, send me an email. I'll connect you with her so that you can get some assistance directly to her. If you live in the Chicago area, you might be able to stop by and drop off some canned goods or some food. So anything that could help out. But send us an email at our email address, theamericanhourshow, The American Hour Show, all spelled out, at gmail.com. The American Hour Show at gmail.com. So again, it's on the Facebook page, The American Hour Show. It's on the website. Just send us an email. Let us know how you can help out, and we will connect you with her directly so that she can give you an address to send help to. And like I said, if you live in the area, maybe you could stop by and, you know, go hit the grocery store, buy some food, and bring it by. So this is not, I mean, you know, I always see the people that need help, et cetera, people that really need help, they'll accept food because that's what they need. They'll accept, send in a payment for them to the electric company, et cetera. It's always a tough thing to know that someone's not, you know, trying to scam you or whatever, but Joan is a good friend, and she really could use the help. So please, anybody that can help out, please do so, and send us an email, and we'll connect you. All right, let's see, what else? Anything else, Paula, administratively we have to talk about?
Not that I'm aware of, but I do have a question for you about Newt Gingrich. I'm curious. He's came across in that Washington Post today that he says he's not a Washington figure, okay?
Huh.
And, you know, for our listeners out there with him running, he's described the three prongs of his campaign message as improving the economy, in part with a smarter energy policy, restoring America's exceptionalism with a renewed focus on a decentralized federal government, and doing a better job defending the nation's security. He said that Osama bin Laden was found in a Pakistani city with a large military presence before U.S. soldiers killed him earlier this month, and not in the tribal areas where he had been hunted previously, which was evidence of how poor U.S. intelligence gathering has been. Now, you, Tom, being as well-versed in you know, the American politics and what have you, I'm just curious as to how you feel about Mr. Gingrich. It also came out this weekend. I guess everybody's picking on him because he's got a $500,000 line of credit at Tiffany's. I guess what I'm asking is that what does that have to do with how he would run this country if he were elected?
Well, you know, it's all a good question. Mr. Gingrich is a nice guy. He I've met him and his wife in D.C. at some of the Citizens United movie premieres. They put out all kinds of movies and other things there that are very informational. I was at one. I was invited to one of the premieres last year, and we got to meet them. And they're there, and they sponsor and work with Citizens United as an organization. But he makes some statements that make you wonder. And he did come up with that whole Contract for America, which was great when he was Speaker. But then they kind of fell a little flat after a few years, from what I remember. I'd have to investigate this. I haven't looked closely enough at his record of, say, how we voted and anything controversial he did when he was actually Speaker or a Congressman. I do know that he's quite a historian, and that's always a good thing to know history, and so that we don't repeat it and make similar mistakes. So he is truly a very well-educated historian. He's written quite a few books on the Civil War, and I believe he recently wrote something on, or is working on something about the Revolutionary War. So it's all good stuff, but I don't know that he is the person I would vote for, but if he somehow got the nomination, I would certainly get behind him absolutely to do whatever I could to help him win the election. But I think the way there are a couple of things that play out here when you talk about running a campaign, and sometimes you get good advice, sometimes you get bad advice, sometimes you come up with an idea. You think, hey, I'm going to go after Paul Ryan's, the whole Medicare aspect of it. And it turns out to backfire on you. Certainly got him a lot of press and a lot of news. And, you know, next summer, not this coming summer, but the next summer, a lot of people could forget by then, depending on who else sticks their foot in their mouth, what good things Mr. Gingrich does talk about. So there's a long way to go. But, you know, was that a smart move at this point to go after him on that? It doesn't sound like it worked so well for him. And, but we've got a long way to go, and there's a lot of, you know, we need to find out what his ideas are on, well, that's what the media's going to do. Oh, he's got a $500 line of credit at Tiffany's. Who cares? Big deal.
Right. Exactly.
I got a $5 line at Tiffany's. Okay, well, what's that make me? I mean, it's just, see, that's the thing. The media is going to look for anything that they can, you know, jump on that makes somebody look bad or creates a news story, et cetera. People have to really get away from the media. If I just watch the news, Paula, and I think you know this as well, that if you just watch the news, you're going to get so many half-truths, partial stories. You got to find this stuff out for yourself. Now, I realize the Internet is full of misinformation as well, so I always try and look for information coming from not only a reliable source, but the documents themselves. For example, if there's some legislation, go read the legislation yourself. You know, how many Americans do you think read that bipartisan report, debt commission report, that the president asked some nonpartisan former senators to put together? I read it. I thought it was a complete joke. I was very dismayed by what they talked about in there, and they went after. So when the Democrats say that Republicans want to take away Granny's Medicare and Social Security, the Debt Commission recommended cutting back on Social Security and Medicare. The president's own debt commission. So it's already been decided by his party. He hasn't decided to go after the recommendations, but the commission that he put together. But does anybody talk about? No, of course they don't talk about that. How about the debt commission's report? Didn't cut the size of government one iota. In fact, all it talked about was increasing efficiency. Now maybe spending less on the federal government by increasing efficiency, but don't cut it at all, not in size at all. We can't let go of one little ounce, one little bit of the size of the federal government. But it talked about cutting Medicare and Social Security. So there you have it. There you have it. Why aren't the Democrats running ads about the president's debt commission going after Granny? Well, it's because they're biased and in the media as well. So it's, you can't believe what you read. Here's what I tell people they can do. Newt Gingrich has a website. You can go look. You can go to his website and look what he has to say, what he's putting on it, and you know, get it from the horse's mouth. Now he can tell you whatever he wants to tell you, but I've found many of the websites very informational, especially the presidential websites, because they're going to be put together well, they're going to be big, they're going to have a lot of information, and that's how I knew early on that President Barack Obama was not the right guy for the job. He talked about a lot of things that were very socialistic and naive on his website. And I thought, this is not the guy we can elect. And sure enough, he's turned out to live up to what – but he was honest about it. I got to say, he had a very extensive website, and he was very honest about his opinion and feelings on things and position on things. It made it easy for me. But how many Americans do you think went and dug through his website prior to the election? None of my neighbors – all of my neighbors on my street voted for him. Not one of them went to his website and looked at a single thing. They just relied on CNN sound bites to make their decision. And that just isn't going to work. It's never going to work because the media is biased. And even you could say, well, Fox is biased. I'm not defending anybody. They're all biased in one way or another, and they only give you partial information. It's like when the Libya thing came out, immediately, the media, including Fox News, said, well, the president's got 60 days before he has to get out of there. No, he doesn't. He can't even use the War Powers Resolution to do what he's doing. That's a violation of the resolution, and it's a violation of the Constitution. You know, they say, well, what if we didn't have the War Powers Resolution? That just came along in 73. I'd like somebody to show me where the president can do what he just did. I mean, I'll tell you right now, looking at, I guess it's Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution, where it talks about the authority of the president shall be commander-in-chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into actual service. So we're talking about militia, well, we're talking about the reserves, and if they're called into service, then he's the commander-in-chief. So he's the commander-in-chief. Okay, great. Does it say what he can do? It says he may require – yeah, that's it. That's all it says. Now, being commander-in-chief, does that mean that you get to go declare war or go fight somebody? Look, we have all kinds of military officers that are at high levels, admirals, generals. Do they get to say, you know what, we're going to go attack Libya today? Oh, wait, you don't have authority. But I'm a general. I control all these troops. Just because he's commander-in-chief, okay, he's the head general. But does that give him authority to make all the decisions? No, the Constitution does not say he has any authority. And if the Constitution doesn't say it, he can't do it. So let's review. We do this frequently, but let's review the 10th Amendment. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution. Okay, so is there a power saying that the president can go and attack another country without congressional approval. No, it doesn't say that. So that's a power not delegated to the United States. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have it. The Tenth Amendment essentially says if it isn't written in the Constitution, the federal government can't do it, period. That's it. And the only thing written in the Constitution about going and attacking anybody is that Congress shall declare war. And I just read to you earlier that quote from James Madison, that we all know that if there's anybody who has an interest in going to war, it's the presidency, the executive branch, and that is why we have a Constitution that doesn't give them the authority to do it. So this is all very impeachable. Now, would the Supreme Court stand behind this? You know what the Supreme Court's going to do? The Supreme Court's going to say, well, we have legal precedent. President Clinton went into Bosnia, and President so-and-so, you know, in the Korea War and Vietnam War. They're going to go back to all this precedent. Paula, precedent is the most ridiculous, deceiving way of creating new law or justifying something. What if maybe, you know, when your son was a little bit younger, you kept catching him sticking his hand in the cookie jar? And you say, listen, I told you not to do it. He said, well, there have been a lot of times I've done it, and you just didn't know. And that precedent means I can just do it now, whether you know or not. I mean, that's exactly what they're saying. Just because somebody did it and got away with it multiple times, suddenly, oh, it's legal. It's legal. What about all the bank robbers that ever got away with robbing banks? I think there's some legal precedent there, Paula, that it should be okay to rob banks because there are people that have gotten away with it. There's the precedent. I mean, that's what they're saying. That's their justification. Does that make any sense to you?
It does. It does. And, you know, stuff that we got coming in here, Gingrich was for going into Libya before he was against it, and you know, he also mentioned that any ad which quotes what I said on Sunday is a falsehood.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing, and I said this when Karen was on the show.
Yeah.
I may have been in favor of going in and getting rid of Gaddafi, but you got to do it legally.
Right.
If we, for example, this is just because it's a good thing doesn't make it right, doesn't make it legal. We have to follow the rule of law. What if I go to the one of the local banks here, go inside and say, listen, take all the money in the vault, come outside to the parking lot with me, and we're going to start handing it out to people. Well, under what authority are you doing this? Just because it's a good thing to do. Well, it's not a good thing. What about the investors and the people's money in here? I know, but you know, for the people out here on the street, it's a good thing. So let's do it. I mean, number one, I would have no legal authority to tell the bank to do that. Number two, it's going to hurt somebody. So we were lucky going in to get Osama bin Laden, but some things fell apart. And this is what I said going back when this first occurred, is the president had no hesitation in saying, we want to have evidence, I want to send troops in, versus just blowing the whole compound up. You can see, as you've listened to what actually transpired, things could have gone wrong, terribly wrong, and I realize that soldiers sign up to do their job knowing that they could die, but we have a commander-in-chief that didn't hesitate to risk their lives so that we could, quote, have evidence. It may have been the right thing to do, to send him in, but what bothers me is he didn't hesitate about that. What he hesitated about was doing the whole thing to begin with. So it tells me he's not really very concerned about our soldiers. He's concerned about politics and how this is going to look and how it's going to work out for him.
Well, it's evidenced by the fact that I don't think anybody's heard anything about what he's had to say about the devastation down in Missouri.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. Yes, he's silent on that. Well, no, he's in Ireland, reaching back to his roots.
Yeah, I got roots back in Ireland, too.
Yeah, I know. It's so important. The guy's just, you know, he's on the campaign trail, even though, well, or Ireland can't vote for him, but he's going to take every opportunity to get up in front of the microphone and give a speech. But, yeah, he's reaching back to his roots. This guy's got roots everywhere, doesn't he? Seems like everywhere he goes, oh, I got a great-great-granduncle that used to be, you know, Irish or was Irish or whatever, you know.
This
great.
Is what I've been talking about is what about what goes on here? I mean, these people down, you know, in these states that have been hit by devastation, they can't catch a break.
Right.
But yet, you know, it would be nice to hear something. I mean, I've been listening to the news all morning. I listened to, I think it's MSNBC or whatever it is, in the morning. And I don't believe that I've heard one peep out of his mouth of, you know, our thoughts are with them and our prayers are with it. Something. No, it's all about what he's going to go do and what's in it for him, and he's out, you know, on his jaunt. That's all fine and well, but what about these individuals? I mean, I watched a good 3 or 4 hours of another town being leveled. What are we doing for them?
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, our friend Steve Rosenblum, let's plug him and his show. He does his show every day at 2 o'clock on Blog Talk Radio. You can also link to him, find his link at the USA Talk Radio Network, our webpage. Go there and find Steve Rosenblum and Daria DiGiovanni. They have some great guests on, especially on the weekend. That's their big day, Saturday, and I believe it's 6 p.m. on Saturday. But go check out the link. But Steve threw out a few comments here. that was pretty good. If Newt isn't a Washington figure, then Tom isn't a naval aviator. let's see, what else? So, I think Newt is about Newt. And I can tell you this right now. I never would have sat on a couch next to Nancy Pelosi and talked about climate change. If he thinks climate change is any actual reality whatsoever, then, yeah, I would never vote for Newt. Anybody that believes in that is deluded and is not looking at the facts at all. But it was a cozy kind of thing to do back when Democrats were in charge of everything, and who knows what he was thinking at the time, but it was just a way to keep his face out there, his name out there, I guess. Well, that's a career politician. Somebody's less concerned about what's really going on. He should have sat on that couch and looked at Nancy Pelosi and said, what are you doing to create jobs? What are you doing to improve the economy? But no, he did that. Then he did something with Hillary as well. I wouldn't be on doing a spot with either of those for anything other than debating them. So, yeah, it has to make you wonder. We have smart people that are smart on certain issues and good on issues, but then when they can flip-flop so easily, and I'm not saying he's flip-flopping. What I'm saying is people that can, this is just an example. We see somebody like our own president that can flip-flop, blow with the wind. They're not reliable. You can't rely on them. So that's what the voter's going to have to do to determine if Newt is reliable and look at what he's done over the years, what he's said over the years. So in any case, all right, well, I think we're kind of out of time. We were going to talk about some other stuff, Paula, but we'll have to bring that up tomorrow live from Lima, Peru. And any last words, Paula, before we go?
Just that our families love and miss the troops that are serving out in other countries. Looking
yes.
forward to having home soon.
That's the part of the government that does this job well, very, very well, our military. My gosh. I'm so proud of our military and what they've done in recent years. And we miss you all and want to get back home. In fact, just riding down the road, I saw somebody nailed a sign up on a telephone pole, and it simply said, bring our troops home.
Yep.
And I know that we have a mission to do in these places, but I think we could bring them home sooner than later, and that ought to be the goal. So
yeah,
anyway.
Definitely.
Oh, I wanted to play. Well, we can play it tomorrow. I got a soundbite from Gene Simmons talking about President Obama. Maybe we'll kick off the show tomorrow with this soundbite. It's about a 3-minute soundbite of him telling us what he really thinks about President Obama, even though he voted for President Obama. So we'll have that to look forward to tomorrow. All right, Paula, have a great evening. Thanks for being here, and we will see everybody tomorrow.
You as well, Tom. Have a good and safe trip.
All right, thanks.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.